Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
This is the ball of Tiger Woods.
Vern, this is extremely difficult. This is one of the toughest pitches on the entire place here.
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, as always, we'll be starting with the papers very shortly, joined by our own Ken Doherty live from Milton Keynes. And in racing, we'll be talking to racing pundit and Racing Post contributor Andrew Blair-White about the very latest news from there and getting his lucky 15 as well. In rugby, we're going to be talking to sports journalist for the Irish Independent and the Left Wing podcast, Will Slattery, to preview the Champions Cup final and also have a chat about the pretty epic games that went on last night between Munster and Connacht. A bit feisty that game was, and also the Leinster-Ulster game. There was no holding back from the four provincial sides. So we'll talk to Will about that a little bit later in the show as well. And GA, we're delighted to be joined in studio by GA correspondent, of course, Declan Drake, as we come back to all things GA. And Dublin are taking on Laois as well, of course, at 5 o'clock today in the hurling. In football, Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call. We'll be looking back at last night's Premier League division, plus all the action from the Premier League here, both here at home and overseas, of course. And in the comeback, the COVID-19 return to sports this week, and the last of our COVID comebacks, we'll be talking to Michael Lamb, who's the head coach of and founding member of the Satanta Boxing Club in Newbridge in County Kildare, about how COVID has impacted the club and the developments and the strides that they're making down there. And Deirdre Smith will also be joining us, talking about golf, and in particular talking about Stephanie Meadow, and of course qualifying for the US golf, the ladies US golf, of course. So, and any other golfing news as well. I see Paul Dunne is going well too in the Masters. So as usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport. Well, as I said, Ken joins us now on the line. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
A very good morning to you, Reg. How are you?
Very good, yeah. It's a bit miserable here today. It's been a beautiful week. There's a great thing going on here at the moment, Ken. There's a conspiracy theory. I saw balls.ie had it out yesterday that they reckon they're even interfering now with our weather apps, because all week it was supposed to be lashing rain and all week it was glorious sunshine and we were able to get out for golf and all sorts of things. They're trying to keep us indoors. They're closing down Dublin and everything.
It's all these cyber attacks, Reg. It's all these cyber attacks.
there's some sort of an attack going on. All right,
we had thunderstorms over here during the week, lightning thunderstorms, and then the weather came out. It was beautiful, so it wasn't too bad. We managed to get out and have a little bit of golf. How about you?
Yeah, got out yesterday for the first time in a long time. Played Druids. Beautiful beautiful day out with Jim Kinsella and Aaron Tracy and Jeff. We were playing all right. I lost the money though. No good. So driving well, but everything else was
brilliant. I went out and got a little lesson, because every time I was teeing off it was 4 right, you know, and now it's not too bad, it's 4 left now.
The driving is okay for me, the putting is okay, it's everything in between.
I don't think I could even drive the buggy straight, you know, that's my problem.
It's good to be back out though, isn't it? Jeez, the difference.
Yeah, it's great.
It really is.
Yeah, it's great.
Speaking of golf, it's going okay for Paul Dunne.
I'm delighted to see him playing again. Like, I'm playing, you know, the way we know he can. Like, a couple of years ago, you know, he was flying high, wasn't he? And doing really well. And then he's had a real sort of lean time, and he fell off the main tour. And but it's great to see him back up there. So hopefully he'll get a good run now today and tomorrow and some much valuable sort of prize money for himself, you know. Yeah. And Seamus Power as well, doing so well in the Warren Nelson as well, across the way in America. He shot 8 under, was it, yesterday? He's fantastic.
No, there's some real good talent, no question about. And of course, the USPGA is coming up next week, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course Rory, the way Rory finished off last week, so that would put him in a good position. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He needs it, really, didn't he? You know, it's been so lean for him. He's one of the best players in the world, but not really sort of doing what you would expect him to do. I know there's a lot of change in his life and that. He's had a little babby and everything like that, but he's just it's great to see him back in the winner's rostrum, and hopefully he'll be competing now at that PGA.
Yeah, but funny you say that, because I was listening to Off the Ball, the lads were talking about the golf, and they were talking about Rory and the win, obviously, and how well that was. And, you know, we all seem to have that kind of attitude that, he's fallen off a little bit. But they were saying he only finished outside the top 10 six times in the last year. And, you know, we're all going, he's fallen off. See, only, like, outside the top 10 six times. It's an incredible
stat. I know, yeah. So, yeah, it is, you know, yeah.
He's always just been off it. Not far off it at all. Like, he hasn't fallen off a cliff. I mean, if you look at the likes of Ethan, these guys, and other players who kind of just completely went off the boil and granted come back, he hasn't been at that level. So, I hear what you're saying. For Rory, he's so good. Like, he is.
Yeah, exactly, I mean, he was up there, you know. We thought he was going to take over the mantle from Tiger Woods and stuff like that, you know. And, I mean, when you see the likes of Johnson or Brooks Koepka, what they've done, I mean, Rory is just as talented as those guys, you know?
100%.
And Rahm and all those guys at the top of the game. And you would expect him to be on the winner's rostrum a little bit more. Yeah, okay, he's making top 10 and all that. But what was that Tiger Woods said about finishing second? He said, second sucks.
Yeah.
And third sucks even more. So, you know, it's great to finish second or third. You know, you're picking up lots of money, but, you know, it's the mindset, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's the mindset. And don't mind those lads that are off the ball. What do they know? And anyway, you know what I mean? Stick to Dublin's Falcon Sport.
True. Because we're not on
duty. Yeah.
So, what's been up to, other than that? Snooker's a little bit quieter, of course.
The seniors finished, Jimmy lost in the final. I lost to the guy in the quarterfinals 4-3.
Mm.
And Jimmy lost 5-3 in the final to a guy called David Lilly. So that's the end of the season now until the middle of July now. It doesn't pick up again. So there's been a new tournament announced in Turkey in a place called, I don't know where you've been. You've been to Turkey and Antalya is it? I don't know where it's a resort there. It's supposed to be beautiful. It holds the Turkish Golf Open there, I think, and it's supposed to be really, really nice. So a snooker event's going to go ahead there in October, all being well with travel restrictions and stuff in place. But that's a completely new sort of a new venture, new country. Snooker's, we never had a ranking tournament there ever before. So
when is
sponsored by the Turkish government.
When is it supposed to happen?
In October.
October, okay, yeah. I read about it during.
So if you're not doing that, then you want to carry the queue, you want to get away for a few days.
Well, my last memories of Turkey was I got a dodgy kebab in Kusadasi and I wasn't right for a week after. So I won't be rushing back now, in fairness. But I did read about the tournament moving there, but it was a bit of a strange one because COVID is apparently rampant over there. So, you know, it'll need to sort itself out a bit before you're getting on a plane to go over to Turkey.
Well, I know, yeah. I mean, it's not till October, so we've got a few months, 6 months or 5 months yet. But, I suppose, it just depends on restrictions. I mean, we were supposed to have a tournament in Saudi as well last year, and that obviously was cancelled until this year, and it'll probably be cancelled again until 2022, you know. But it's good to see that these countries are open to play and play some tournaments, and particularly Turkey, because a country that we never thought, you know, even played snooker or liked snooker or whatever. But it just shows you how much sort of television can have an influence, and particularly Eurosport, because Eurosport would be always sort of beaming into the likes of Turkey, the Middle East and stuff like that. We know how big it is over in China and the Far East. But, it'll be fantastic if it comes off. Whether it comes off now this year, just depends on the speed of how vaccinations and how things are going to go. But, Yeah, it's still quite a long way away. Yeah, but it's great. It's great anyway.
Oh, I can't wait to go home and tell Frida that I'm off to Turkey in October.
You could be my guru, Reg.
Your bodyguard, more likely. I think that'd be a bit more of a fitting role. I think I'll work in security. That sounds good. Yeah.
There was a great story. The lads were playing down in South Africa in Johannesburg at the World Amateur Championships once, you know. Mm. And they were warned by the security in the hotel not to go out, you know, outside the hotel unless you're going in a hotel car. You can't just walk around because it can be a little bit dangerous, you know. But in the same hotel where the WWE, the World Wrestling Federation, they were staying and the wrestlers were staying in the same hotel, you know. Yeah. And they said this to the wrestlers. as well. That they couldn't walk out, you know, telling these big 6'8" lads, you know, muscled out, not to go outside, you know. And they, of course, they walked outside, walked down the road and were exploring around the outskirts. Didn't they all get mugged?
Yeah. I have a similar story.
The WWE wrestlers got mugged by the South Africans. All the money taken off, they came back to the hotel.
We toured it in 98, I think it was, and a similar story. We were staying in Joburg and we decided we'd do a line-out session, and we kind of, same as that, we'd been warned by security, you know, you don't go outside and you do this and you go blah, blah, blah. And we headed down to the local park and we started to do a line-out session. Now, as you know, rugby players aren't the smallest in the world, no more than the rest of
us. No.
We're doing a line-out session in the park, about 15 forwards and 15 fairly big men. And we had to go back to the hotel. Within, I'd say, 5 minutes of us arriving in the park, we were surrounded by a couple of hundred, and things were starting to get a little bit uneasy.
A couple of hundred,
you know. And now, to be fair, it was just people coming to see what the hell was going on, basically. Why were there 15 white guys, basically, in the middle of this park in Joburg? Doing and what were they doing? And they were suspicious, and they were, you know, they've had their problems over there over the years. We had to get back to the hotel as quickly as we could. We hightailed it back. So, moral of the story: listen to security when they tell you.
Listen to security. Yeah.
But South Africa has moved on a lot, thankfully.
One place I've never been to, but I always wanted to go. I always wanted to go to the Kruger Park and stuff like that, and explore sort of Cape Town. And even though, like, you know, we've had a couple of South African snooker players, the Franciscos, over the years, who were like big players in the 80s and stuff like that. But and Perry Mans as well, who got to the final of the World Championship, won the Masters. He was from South Africa, but we haven't had a tournament down there for a long, long, long time. I've never been, like, you know.
Amazing
country I'd love to go and see,
It's an amazing country, obviously. It's still developing in the modern sense since apartheid went out in 95. Which is a long time ago now, but they're still very much just finding their way through everything. But it's an amazing country, a beautiful country, but it has a lot of problems.
I tell you what I watched, which I watched it a few times. Well, I watched it there a couple of weeks ago, which was on the TV again. It was a beautiful movie, Matt Damon in it and Morgan Freeman, Invictus,
yeah.
About the World Cup in South Africa and how they won it. And they weren't favourites at all. They had a terrible run up to it. But it was amazing how Morgan Freeman and got the team to get, not got the team together, but got the whole country behind the team.
Yeah.
And really sort of rallied the team, you know? Sorry, Nelson Mandela.
I think Nelson deserves a bit more credit than Morgan Freeman now, to be fair. I know what you're saying. Morgan Freeman portrayed him very well in the movie.
He did. Yeah, it was quite realistic, wasn't it?
It certainly was. You think Morgan Freeman saved
the He convinced me. Anyway,
what an acting! Well, you got an Oscar for that one. It was probably one of the worst films I ever saw. I'm glad you enjoyed it, but I was.
Did you not like it? No,
I was laughing my ass off the whole way through it, looking at Matt Damon trying to portray a rugby player and some of the
action scenes. The story, though, I thought was fantastic. Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, I was there at that time in 95 when it happened and saw it all unfold, and we were tourists with Greystones, and I spent 3 weeks there, so I saw every single bit of what was happening.
Did you really? Yeah.
Yeah, it was unreal. Like, even the South African flag as it stands today with all the colours, you know, that lovely flag that they have?
That was
that championship. And as you toured around South Africa, Cape Town, Durban, Joburg, Pretoria, all these different places, just to see the effect it had on the nation, you know, a worldwide event, all the eyes on of the world on them. The way sport had the effect on the political side of things was absolutely incredible.
Really,
really enjoyable place to be and a great tournament to be part of. But as you said, they were... The All Blacks were the red hot favourites. Now, there's a few of the All Blacks I know, chatting to them afterwards, that in years later, that played in that final, that would tell you stories that, you know, there was a lot of them that weren't too well the next day playing.
Yeah, I know. I heard all sorts of rumours of the coffee being spiked. I heard that story. All right. A lot of them
had
upset tummies and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, but Morgan Freeman didn't say anything about that in the movie.
No, he didn't say anything about that. No, but it was quite incredible how they all went to Robben Island and bought a sale and, you know, like little things like that, you know, little snippets of
information.
Huge chapter in the changing of
South Africa and the way the world looked at it. And from that point of view, it was only fitting that they did go on and win it. It was quite incredible.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You'll get there someday.
What
about the FA Cup?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I was so disappointed, United, like, losing to Leicester to get into the final of the FA Cup, because, you know, I grew up watching the FA Cup. It was one of the reasons why I followed Manchester United. When they played Liverpool back in 1977, when they beat Liverpool 2-1 in the final of the FA Cup. I mean, the FA Cup, when you think about it, when you go back all those years, Reg, it was such a big day out, like, you know, for both teams, and how much it was covered on ITV. BBC or ITV. They start really early in the morning, you know, and then you'd have, I mean, you know, it was just an incredible tournament, and the final particularly was a big thing in the sporting calendar, where it's lost that resonance, you know, quite a lot to the Champions League and, of course, the Premier League now, with the teams fighting to stay in or trying to get into the Champions League. But it's sort of lost its importance a little bit over the years, hasn't it? Which is a terrible shame, but I've always loved the FA Cup, I must say.
I loved it as well. I've always loved it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Remember, like, you'd see the pictures would come, and especially if it was an obscure team or an outsider that managed to make it to the final. And the whole town of wherever it might be, whether it be, you know, whatever, Leeds, Newcastle, doesn't really matter. And you'd see these busloads of people getting ready from early morning and making the bus trip down and having a few beers in the bus and the singing and the whole thing and then converging on Wembley for the final and all that kind of stuff. It was just absolutely amazing, that whole thing. And you don't get that anymore, that kind of... grouping of fans that they wouldn't get the day out to go to London or that. Anymore, it's lost. It's a real shame.
It is a terrible shame. But I mean, for those supporters who are going to be at Wembley today, I think it's going to be about 20,000. I mean, that will be it'll be quite special for them. You know, like you know, when I think about the World Championship final, you know, where the crowds were in, and on the final night, where, you know, myself and McManus were doing the first four frames. Like, the bowls were quite emotional, you know, with the crowd there, you know, and how the MC got the crowd going before the players even came in, because we've been sort of bereft of that for a whole year now, you know, and it was quite emotional. So I'm sure it'll be the same for those supporters there today, and hopefully that everything will be it'll be a great game and it'll go off very, very well. Yeah, but the FA Cup for me was it brings back a lot of childhood memories of watching United lose at the Arsenal. Do you remember that 1979 to 3-2 in the last minute to the Alan Sunderland goal that broke our hearts like all those years ago? For you, it was great, but for me, But the old, you know, in the park, you put down the jersey. You never see that anymore, do you? The old you know, the jerseys on the ground and the little the games in the park and stuff like that. It's amazing how things have changed so much all those years ago, you know.
Absolutely. Who do you think is going to win? Yeah. I mean, Chelsea look very hot at the moment.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it'd be great for Leicester. Leicester have been four times now in the final. They've never won it. So I think it would be a wonderful story for Leicester. I mean, winning the Premiership was just incredible, 5,000-1. But to win the FA Cup would be a great achievement for them. And great for their manager, Brendan Rodgers. Mm. But also for Chelsea, they've won it 8 times. they're behind. Manchester United have won it 12, I think, and Arsenal have won it 14. But it would be, yeah, for what he's done, that Tuchel, since he's arrived at Chelsea when they sacked Lampard,
yeah.
I mean, he's really turned the whole club around. You can see the setup, the way they're very solid at the back, and, you know, he's a really top manager, you know.
They're playing great football, though, as well.
They're playing great, very, very good football. Absolutely brilliant football. They've got some really, I like that Mason Mount, I spoke about him a couple of weeks ago. You know, he's been at Chelsea since he was 6, and you know, he's really come to the fore now. He's electric pace, and he's a really he's in the England setup now as well. Of course, he's a top player, so I think Chelsea may just edge it, but I'd love Leicester to win, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, no, it feels to me like it's gonna go Chelsea's way, just purely because of the way that we've been seeing them play. You know, I suppose it was a bit strange to see them losing to Arsenal. You know, maybe that'll give Leicester that little bit of a hope as well. But I just think that definitely the favourites are Chelsea. There's no question about it. I just think they
were. Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. You know, and of course, they've got the Champions League to look forward to. But they've also got another match with Leicester in the Premiership. You know, it's like two FA Cup finals that they're going to play Leicester in, because that match is going to be absolutely massive for Chelsea, for Leicester, and indeed for Liverpool as well, who have a sneaky chance now. You know, I mean, if Chelsea beat Leicester and Liverpool win the last 3 games, they may sneak into the top 4. So there's a lot of implications. Leicester have also got to play Tottenham as well.
Yeah.
So their last 2 matches of the season are really, really tough to try and stabilise their position in that top 4. So, yeah, it's a big couple of weeks for all those teams now. You know, it's getting really interesting. But I'm really looking forward to this FA Cup, you know, and I hope that it brings back the glamour of yesteryear. I don't think it will, because, you know, the money in the game now is staying in the Premiership and getting in the Champions League has obviously surpassed that. But for me, as a romantic, I mean, the FA Cup is always very, very special. And I managed to go to a couple of finals. I saw United lose to Arsenal down at the Millennium Stadium when Wembley was being rebuilt. They lost on penalties to Arsenal.
Yeah.
I saw them beat Chelsea 4-1. I saw them beat, actually, was it Oldham? They scored the last kick of the game when Oldham were winning 1-0, and Mark Hughes scored a volley in the semi-final.
Right.
To get into the final against Chelsea, and then when they won the replay and got into the final against Chelsea and beat Chelsea 4-1, that was a cracker as well. So there's some great memories down in Wembley, and some bad memories down in the Millennium Stadium down in Cardiff.
That was some game last night as well. Did you catch any of the Newcastle match?
And a much changed side as well, wasn't it, from Man City. You know, given a debut to the keeper as well. But, I'm delighted for Steve Bruce, though. He got manager of the month. You know, he kept Newcastle, you know, when there was a lot of pressure on. Hasn't been given much money. And to keep them in the Premiership when it looks like Fulham might have caught them at one stage, like halfway during the season. But, delighted for Steve Bruce. But, it looks like, Man City, you know, for me, the disappointing thing for United was, you know, these last 2 games, losing to Leicester, when he put out a sort of a half a side, and then losing to Liverpool. Although Liverpool were very impressive, but I just thought United's mind is obviously on the Europa League. But still, to lose to Liverpool the way they did was disappointing, you know?
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah. I was thinking of you. Like, I know how hard it is for you to give Liverpool any praise and losing to them. But it kind of, they lost in a, you know, they didn't really put up much of a resistance, did they? They kind of just...
I thought Liverpool played well, though. You know,
they did.
I think And I think it shows United up for what they have in that team, as well as they have been playing. It shows you a certain amount of team. The boys, like, and particularly Keane, I love watching Keane on Sky Sports. He's just so direct and so honest, you know. But it shows up exactly what United are missing, and they're missing at least three, possibly if not four players. And there has to be some big summer signings this year, you know.
No, there has to be. All right, I suppose it kind of it reignites Liverpool's chances. Really pushes them back up again. That top four race is going to be something else. You know, they're four points I think behind Chelsea now at this stage. It is getting exciting, that top four thing. That's the one thing we know. The league is over, but the top four thing is really getting exciting.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's the old joke about Liverpool when it was a city of culture, you know. It was given the city of culture many years ago. You know, I always say this to the Liverpool fans. I didn't realise it was a city of culture until I came outside my hotel and my car was jacked up on four encyclopedias, you know. the allies were gone.
Yeah, you're a bad man, I tell you. I'll be getting it's all right for you over there. I'm the one that's going to be looking at the WhatsApps coming in here, giving out.
If you give it, you have to take it. That's what they say. You know,
no
I take
question.
Plenty, so I don't mind giving it out.
When you're supporting United the way they're going at the moment, you'll be having to take it, that's for sure. No question about that. All right, listen, good chat.
Okay, enjoy the cup final, Reg.
You too.
I look forward to listening to the rest of the show and the Lucky 15 as well, and of course, the rugby section. I'm looking forward to that. And of course, Alan Carley as well.
Yeah.
I'll always like to hear what he has to say, some of the crap that he comes out with. Just make sure he's not in the park feeding the ducks, you know, with the noise.
No,
the
it's
back.
Wet this morning. Just the rain.
All right, okay. Have a good weekend.
Mind yourself. You too.
Bye.
That's Ken Doherty there, coming to us from the UK, giving his thoughts on the various different things. And of course, he thinks that Morgan Freeman freed South Africa from apartheid way back when. And what a job he did as well. Okay, we're going to take a break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, where we're going to be talking about the COVID comeback in just a moment. We still have lots to come on the show. Andrew Blair-White will be joining us to talk about all of this week's Enns racing and give us his lucky 15 as well. Will Slattery will be talking rugby with me, of course, of the Irish Independent and the Left Wing podcast. And I'll be talking to Will Slattery about the football, Declan Drake with the GA, and Deirdre Smith too about the golf. So we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11. We'd love to hear from you on text at 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp indeed on 087 188 1068. Now, every week, as the intro said there, we've been running features on various clubs and organisations around the country who have been dealing with the COVID crisis and their comeback to their sport. Michael Lamb is the head coach and founding member of Satanta Boxing Club in Newbridge County, Kildare, and they're a relatively new club set up in 2017, and they've already done really well, which I'll discuss with Michael. And it's very good to have you on the show. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are things?
Things are great, thanks. It feels like we're starting to come out of things, Michael, and we're starting to get back to a bit of normality. And I know in your own sport, like a lot of other sports, you've been able to get back to a little bit of training, and the boxers have been doing some outdoor stuff with you.
Absolutely. You know, it's really exciting after the year that I've been in it, you know, and the uncertainty, you know, there is all of a sudden there seems to be a little bit of certainty going forward, and it looks like we're coming to the end of this COVID crisis. But from a sports point of view and getting kids back, you know, the excitement over the last few weeks, just to start to see the kids back out training and being involved in sport again, has been fantastic. We're typically, I suppose, an indoor sport, so outside it's not ideal. However, we're not going to argue about getting the opportunity to get back training. I mean, if we're going to compete with other sports who are training outdoors on a regular basis, we need to start doing something to get kids involved in boxing.
Yeah.
So this is a fantastic opportunity for us, you know, and it's great, you know, it's great for kids to be involved in any sport is fantastic. But for the layoff for them over the last year and that uncertainty, and to be able to give them that little bit of certainty again and get them back involved and doing what they want to be doing, and especially to give them the opportunity to box again. A big development, I suppose, for us over the last week was the return to contact training. You know, like most sports, the training and getting their fitness and getting them involved was fantastic. But now this opportunity to involve them in contact is monumental for us as a boxing club, you know, because there's one thing, training skills and, you know, the fundamentals, but to be able to develop those skills by putting someone in front of them now or being allowed to do pads, you know, that's a huge advantage to us at the moment.
Of course it is. And tell me a little bit about the club itself. I know you're only in existence since 2017. How did you come about, or what made you decide to set the club up down there in Newbridge?
Yeah, that's interesting. Sometimes I do ask that question to myself and wonder, you know,
what did I have
to get myself into, you know. But I have to say, looking back, it's been a roller coaster. We established in 2017, early 2017, and you know, my own kids had an interest in boxing. I was after retiring out of the Defence Forces, I had a little bit more time on my hands, and I decided to get involved in boxing. I remember boxing, and I was very fond from my own youth. I was involved in a local club in Kilcullen, so I had a love for boxing. And we were involved in a club in Newbridge, Ryston Boxing Club, and that was gone a little bit quiet, I suppose. And we wanted to give the opportunity to kids in the Newbridge area the opportunity to box. And I was in contact with the principal of the Gael School in Newbridge, and he offered us a building there if we wanted to use it. And, you know, as the principal, Sean De Prayer is his name, as the principal of the school, obviously he wanted to promote kids' training and that. And I said, geez, you know, this is fantastic. I said, we're thinking of setting up a boxing club. And we sort of came together. They had a building. It was an old style barn where they used to store machinery in olden days. And he gave us the use of that. So we got together. We started off with a relatively small crowd of kids, and we built that up over time to, there's over 70 children now involved between the ages of 7 and 18, which is fantastic. And we opened it up to both boys and girls. And I have to say, the girls are starting to outnumber the boys. We've gone up to over 20 girls at the moment.
That's amazing.
Which, it's absolutely amazing, because, you know, that wouldn't be very typical of most clubs. And I'd say, I'm probably open to disagreement on that, but I'd say that's probably one of the largest number of girls in any club in the Leinster area, which is fantastic. And no doubt, partly influenced by the likes of the success of Katie Taylor, absolutely, Kelly Harrington and others, you know.
Yeah.
But we have a few little girls there, trailblazers. Esther, my own daughter, she was our first Irish champion in the end of 2017. She won Irish first. And
that's
the following year,
the European schoolgirl championships, wasn't it?
No, that was our first year. That was 2017. And in the second year then, she was joined by another young girl, Erin Healy, a local girl from Newbridge. She won an Irish title.
Yeah.
That was 2018. And in 2019, we were really starting to get traction. Erin, she didn't win that year, but she was replaced by a girl by the name of Brianna Ryan, won the Irish, and Esther won the National Cadets. We had two boys then won the Nationals that year as well, Fennan McGuire and Ryan Connolly. And Esther winning the Cadets, that qualified her to go on to the European Championships in Georgia. Of course, she went out there and done fantastic. She went on, was only beaten in the final on a split decision, very unlucky, and brought home a silver medal for us. So we were really getting momentum going coming into 2020, and we were expecting, after doubling up every year, we were expecting to do the same again in 2020.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the number of kids just prior to that had qualified to go on to national level, but they didn't get the opportunity. But we had a huge success in Kildare Championships. We had over 20 boxers won Kildare titles that year.
Right.
So it was very exciting times for us. And then obviously we arrived into the COVID, and like everybody knows, the whole bloody place went down.
Yeah, and a lot of big effect on everything. I mean, it is very unusual. Like, you know, Obviously, girls' participation in sport has increased dramatically across the board, but you probably would be maybe forgiven for thinking, well, you'd expect it maybe in GAA, they get huge sponsorship and advertising behind them, and same with football. And again, they're more skill-based sports, but traditionally, boxing would be associated a little bit more with the aggressive nature, which maybe women wouldn't be quite as renowned for. They'd be more the nurturing side. So it is very unusual to see so many girls getting into it.
Yeah, and absolutely. And even parents would, you know, they'd be nervous, whether it's boys or girls, they're always nervous. Nobody wants to put their child in harm's way. And I suppose once you step between the ropes, obviously you are, you're in there, but someone's going to try and hit you.
Yeah.
And it's the last thing a parent wants to do. However, I think it probably, you know, most people get their idea of boxing from seeing on the television and the professional style, you know, where it's long rounds and it's heavy hitting. But at amateur level, it's not quite the same. It's almost, it's a build-up to that, of course. A lot of amateurs go professional, but at amateur level, you know, we sort of would promote a skill-based approach and build it. And, you know, we take our time, build it. And, you know, there's never a rush. No child is going to come back boxing and involve themselves in any sport if they keep going home hurt. So it's sort of progressive. And you start them off. There's a style of boxing called combat sparring or schools boxing where you learn the skills, and nobody's going to pick up a new skill if every time they try to do it, they're getting hurt.
Yes.
So it's a progression, and starting off through the skills boxing where it's light contact, there's no heavy hitting, and that gives the kids an opportunity to develop their skill. And then by the time they're getting old enough for it to be a little bit more competitive, they're ready for that. They're built up to it, but you're certainly not going to throw in any kid.
Straight in. And the event.
Yeah, yes, course, yes, yes.
Well, Michael, it sounds like you're doing an amazing job down there. I'm delighted to see that you're back, and hopefully you'll keep going from strength to strength down there in Setanta Boxing Club. Well done, and good luck with it all. And thank you so much for telling us your story this morning.
Thanks, Reggie. Thanks for having us
on. Thanks a lot. That's Michael Lamb, their head coach and founding member of Setanta Boxing Club down in Newbridge, County Kildare, where they're going from strength to strength, both at boys and girls level down there in Kildare. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, we'll be talking horse racing. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport. With thanks to insuremyvan.ie. You can text us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068 if there's anything you'd like to put to our guests. Okay, it's time to turn our attention to horse racing now, and I'm delighted to be joined by Andrew Blair-White, our regular contributor. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, very good, Reggie. How are you?
Very good indeed, thanks. Yeah, it's been a good week, an enjoyable week. There was plenty going on last week. And, of course, Leopardstown, we saw the Durnstown Stakes won by Bolshoi Ballet.
Yeah, it was a very impressive performance. I remember we were talking last week about the matchup between Bolshoi Ballet and Max Swinney of Jim Bulger's. And Max Swinney probably looked like he needed the run after being off for quite a long time, and maybe wants a bit of softer ground as well. But Bolshoi Ballet was extremely impressive. He won the Bally Sacks at Leopardstown only a month ago as well, and I think he's now in short of 7-4 for the Epsom Derby in a couple of weeks' time. And to be honest, that doesn't seem an overreaction based off his two performances at Leopardstown. They've been visually so impressive. He shows good turn of foot. He stays very well, and I suspect he'll be Ryan Moore's pick of the Aidan O'Brien lock in the Derby. So he's certainly one to be keeping the right side of. And even though he is a short price, it's certainly justified on what he's done so far.
And Joan of Arc was impressive as well in the 1,000 Guineas.
Yeah, she was impressive in the 1,000 Guineas trial there at Leopardstown. And she'll go now to the Irish 1,000 Guineas. She won a maiden at the Curragh over that course and distance earlier this season as well. She's probably been one of these slightly slow burners. I don't think Aidan O'Brien, I think he'd admit himself that his two-year-olds were a little bit sick last year, actually. Plenty of them were drilled plenty hard enough for Royal Ascot at the start of the year and probably didn't train on throughout the season as much. Joan of Arc only ran the once as a two-year-old and has come back and looked a pretty good filly this year. So she should go quite close in the 1,000 Guineas here in Ireland. It's interesting that they bring Mother Earth, who won the 1,000 Guineas in England, over to France. So they're probably not going to run the two of those two against each other, which may be a tip in itself.
Main racing this weekend, we're probably looking at Newbury and Naas then tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. The best race today at Newbury is the Lockinge Stakes. It sees Palace Pier reappear again after what was a brilliant three-year-old campaign. He won the St. James's Palace. He won the Prix Jacques Lemarois over in France last year as well. And he's a super horse. He's a super miler. He's a strong staying miler as well. And he won on his reappearance at Sandown last month, like he was retaining all of that ability. I think he's 4-6 or something. That's not a sort of price that I'd advise anyone to back at, but he has a clear favourites chance. Potentially in that race, if you wanted one at an each-way option or maybe without the favourite, John Quinn's horse, Safe Voyage, he actually came over and won at the Champions Weekend at Leopardstown last year. He won the Boomerang Mile. He's quite a good horse, and the more rain that falls over in England, the better for him. He loves soft ground. And I think these days in his career, he probably wants a mile as well. So he might be one to take on the favour with in a without market if you did want to bet on the race.
Very good. Is there anything else that stands out in Newbury and the other races?
Yeah, well, the Aston Park Stakes is a very good race between two very good horses. Al Azzi, who was impressive on his reappearance at Newbury only a couple of weeks ago, looked a good three-year-old last year, and sees the return of Logician as well. For John Gosden and Frankie Dettori, who won the St. Ledger 2 years ago, had an injury plague season last year. We didn't see too much of him, but he's a big, fine, grey horse, very strong horse. And it would be lovely to see him run very well. And there's also a competitive handicap that the London Gold Cup, one that maybe to keep the right side of is a Mark Johnson horse called King Frankel, a son of the great Frankel himself. But he's been an improving horse. He won his maiden last time at Pontefract by half the track, by 32 lengths. And he's in here off a mark at 83 and could be very well handicapped. And I see there's been money for him this morning as well.
Oh, very good. Okay. Give me a quick rundown of your Lucky 15 then. Where are we looking at for this week?
Yeah, well, we're a bit around the place, Reggie. As today, at Bangor, the 110, it's a maiden hurdle. I quite like a Donald McCain horse called Chuvello, who I think you can get around 7-2 this morning on him. He was a good bumper horse for Donald McCain. He won a couple of bumpers and was second to a Tony Martin horse called Good Time Johnny, actually up in Musselburgh last year. But he's been disappointing over hurdles so far. He's shown he was a bit novice-y at times as well, but hopefully back in a softer maiden hurdle here today, and hopefully he'll take an awful lot of beating. And the 150 at Newbury. It's a 6 furlongs, a listed race. I quite like the Queen's horse in this, actually Tactical, who can get around 2-1. Tactical won at Royal Ascot last year, which was brilliant. And I think they might be going for the Diamond Jubilee, which is the big group one over 6 furlongs at Royal Ascot this year as well. And this will be a prep on the way to that. If he was to go for the Diamond Jubilee, he'd want to be winning today. He's up against a good horse called Creative Force, but I think he should take the beating. And then the 3 o'clock at Newbury, a horse that I just mentioned there, King Frankel. I had him down at 8-1. I see he's been backed into around 6-1 in places this morning. I think he's got a very good each way chance and hopefully might go very close. And then tomorrow at Naas, the 4:40 at Naas, the Lacken Stakes, Ado McGuinness's horse in this, A Case of You, 13-2. Back at 6 furlongs, I think will suit this horse down to the ground. They tried him over 7 furlongs and he just didn't stay the last day. So I think back to a more suitable trip, he's a sprinting horse and 13-2 I think looks good value.
Excellent stuff. Okay, I see there's plenty going on in France as well, and both Aidan O'Brien and Jim Bulger, they're kind of chasing doubles for the guineas.
Yeah, exactly. French 2000 and 1000 guineas are on Sunday in Longchamp, and we've got both the guineas winners over there. Poetic Flair runs in the French 2000 guineas for Jim Bulger and Kevin Manning, and he runs against an Aidan O'Brien horse called St. Mark's Basilica, who actually won the Dewhurst last year at Newmarket. So that's a fascinating clash. I'd probably be swaying with the guineas form and backing Poetic Flair in that for Jim Bulger, because it's great to see Jim with such a good horse on his hands. And the French 1000 guineas, you've got Mother Earth, who obviously won under Frankie Dettori, and was very impressive, a strong staying performance. But certainly one to keep the right side of in that race is a horse called Miss Amulet, who's trained by Ken Condon. Ken wouldn't have too many brilliant horses in his yard, but when he does have a very good horse, he knows how to train them. And this horse won a Group 2 at York last year as a 2-year-old and only came a half length behind Alcohol Free in a Group 1 at Newmarket as well. She steps up to a mile for the first time, and I think she might run a big race, and you might get a slightly bigger price about her.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Quickly, the COVID situation and crowds, where are we at in the UK with that? I know we're a bit off it here, but haven't they done trials over there, have they?
Yeah, they're beginning to start trials, and I think they're trying to get 500 people into race courses and then build it up to 2,000 and 2,500, which is great, because obviously the racing is half about the atmosphere on track, and it's been so disappointing over here that we've had to go through many meetings at Leopardstown, only Punchestown a couple of weeks ago, and there was absolutely nobody there. I know we are quite a bit away. I suspect we could only be thinking about that maybe late summer, early kind of September, maybe October time. But over in England, it seems to be going pretty quickly, which is great, and it'd be good for the game if they can get as many people back there as soon as possible. I think they're looking to try and get people back for Royal Ascot, which is mid-June, to have a portion of fans in there for that, which would be brilliant, not only for the course itself, but for the spectacle for people like ourselves watching on TV.
Absolutely. Well, when you see the snooker having full capacity in the final, 20,000 at the FA Cup today, and plenty of other trial sports, you have to think it's only a very short matter of time before it gets back there in the UK. Okay, Andrew, as always, really enjoyed chatting to you this morning. Thanks for that, and hopefully we get some results of your lucky 15.
Yeah, thanks for that, Reggie. Hopefully we'll get a winner or two.
Absolutely. That's Andrew Blair-White there, of course, pundit with the Racing Post, giving us his lucky 15. And that lucky 15 is in Bangor in the 110 Chevello at 5-2 shot, the 150 Newbury Tactical, then again in Newbury in the 3 o'clock King Frankel, and then we're looking at Nace in the 440 Case for You. So we'll put all of those up on our social media channels as well for you to get a better look at. We still have Will Slattery to come for the rugby. Alan Cawley and Deirdre Smith will be all coming up after the news at 10. Welcome back to the second part of Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news, and we want to hear from you, our listeners. Text us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068 if there's anything you would like me to cover across the next hour. Okay, we're turning our attention to rugby now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Will Slattery, of course, of the Irish Independent and the Left Wing podcast. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Enjoyed the rugby last night, I have to be honest with you. Got to watch the highlights, I suppose, back-to-back on TG Carr. And let's start with the Munster-Connacht game. Pretty feisty affair, it has to be said. There was tempers flaring left, right and centre. Great game to watch, very physical. And Connacht, very surprisingly, coming out on top in Thomond Park.
Yeah, completing a clean sweep of away victories over the three rivals. I was actually down there working for Sport, so I got a front row seat to, well, as you say, it was an extremely fiery encounter. There was two incidents, one with Conor Murray when he was on the bench, and one, I think it was with Sean Masterson when he was on the bench, when substitutes were flying in to the thick of it. And I was actually surprised the referee didn't take some action there. And there was captain's challenges, there was goal line stands, there was dramatic tries, there was errors that led to tries. It really had everything. And it's a funny one, because the Rainbow Cup, I suppose, hasn't really caught people's attention, given the way it's been kind of shoehorned in. And that's a pity, because last night's game was so dramatic. Connacht, you know, what a victory for them. You know, it's funny, they go from beating Ulster to being pretty much manhandled by Leinster, then to come down to Thomond Park and deliver that kind of performance. And there was some really impressive displays. Conor Fitzgerald, you know, led really well from out half. You know, Kieran Manny and then Caelan Blade off the bench are really, really good at nine. There was so much to like about that win. And Connacht are just such an interesting team, aren't they? You know, they don't have the resources. They can sometimes be very frustrating. They can let leads slip. There's a couple of games that spring to mind this season against Edinburgh and Scarlett. But then they produce these unlikely victories again. They're so compelling to watch.
You'd have to argue that maybe Munster were the architects. I know CJ Stander came out afterwards and he was basically making a point that he felt the referee wasn't very good on the night and that they were playing against more than 15 players, which is a little bit unusual for him to come out with a statement like that. But I suppose, as well as that, it's trying to take from the victory of Connacht. But I think Munster have only themselves to blame for a lot of the errors. There was a huge amount of errors as well.
Yeah, it's funny on Stander, he was basically saying, I'm leaving. So I think he just kind of was trying caution to the wind in that regard. You look back to the first half, Connacht start to get a penalty when it should have probably been 7. Munster come back with a try to go 7-3 ahead, and then straight to the kickoff, a box to kick off the ball bounces. Sam Arnold runs straight in, so you basically cough up a really key score right after scoring yourself. And similarly, at the start of the second half, Munster got it back to 3 points. I know they're kind of bit of error by Munster, a bouncing ball comes to Kieran Manley, and they're two extremely soft scorers. The Yohan McGrann, I think, after the game was pretty furious about it, because it's such a cheap entry for your opponent when you just kind of wrestle back a bit of momentum. And, you know, there was two disallowed tries for Munster. I know they weren't happy about them, but again, they had other chances they could have taken as well at both ends. So yeah, there was definitely a bit of stopping. It wasn't there in the first two games. They were very clinical in their opening two Rainbow Cup games, to be fair. And also defensively, they were very sound. They didn't make those sort of errors. So yeah, Ben Graham would be extremely frustrated on both counts, attack and defence. There was a lot more errors than we've seen over the last few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it's a big slip from Munster's point of view as well, because they've announced now the Rainbow Cup. It will be the team finishing top of the Northern Hemisphere that will play the team finishing top of the Southern Hemisphere. So it's North versus South, the top two teams in each division. So, like, Munster were in a very controlled position, and now they're back in the dogfight again after Leinster's win.
Yeah, they will be happy that Leinster didn't get that bonus point try. So Munster still have a point advantage over Leinster. So if Munster win their last two games, home to the Cardiff Blues and away to Zebre with bonus points, if you expect they will, that should be enough. Although it must be said, Benetton have destiny in their own hands at the moment. They play Zebre at home today, expect to win that. Then they play Connacht at home and Ospreys away. Two tough games for them, but not by all means unwinnable. So you've actually got a situation where Munster and Leinster are outside looking in, when Benetton maybe take on the Bulls or the Sharks, which will be extraordinary. Like, they've obviously benefited from the fixture schedule, getting to play Zebre twice, and they haven't played them the second time, which he said. So I am looking ahead a little bit, but they looked very good in their first two wins. So yeah, that would kind of sum up, I suppose, the madness of the Rainbow Cup, and now it's thrown under the radar. Munster and Leinster ultimately don't go even into a final, and you have Benetton coming in. But I suppose it provides some interest level over the next few weeks, but I'm not sure what your opinion is. It's safe to say it hasn't really, you know, caught the imagination the way the organisers would have hoped.
Yeah, that's an understatement, to say the least. I'd love to see Benetton get there and end up in the final. It'd be something else, certainly for Italian rugby. I don't know that it'll happen, but it's a competition to fill in the gap. I get it. It's a COVID year. It's understandable. They've got to do what they can do. So we'll forgive it based on those facts. Leinster were pretty impressive again last night, although the scoreline, they didn't get that bonus point, as you said. But, you know, Ulster too were better than they have been, although, again, they fall short.
Yeah, no, you have to say, like, Ulster were 100% better than they had been in their opening two games. Where it was a really disappointing three-week period where it looked like their season had completely derailed. Like, I know they didn't win last night, but they salvaged a bit of pride, and they have something to build off for the last couple of weeks where, albeit they're playing two dead rubbers, you know, they're not ending on a complete whimper, because there was a fear when you saw the Leinster team sheet pick that this could be a hiding. You know, from a Leinster perspective, though, as I mentioned, that bonus point, you know, obviously the Rainbow Cup, it's not the Champions Cup, it's not even the global team, but Leinster would have 100% wanted to win it. They had a great chance to put huge pressure on Munster last night with a statement of a 10 victory, which a team they put out, you would have thought they had a good chance of doing that, and they weren't, and Ulster didn't let them do it. I know there was a couple of things with captain's challenges they could have gone either way, but you know, Leinster hold themselves to such a high standard. They're not getting that bonus point. While it might sound a little like it was arrogant to think in those terms, that's the way they do think. Like, they would have wanted to join Munster on 10 points, to cut the points difference deficit, to put pressure on Munster going into the next couple of rounds, and Benetton, obviously, as well. So from that perspective, I think Leo Cullen won't be happy. Interesting just to read some of his quotes this morning discussing the captain's challenge. It's been a bit of a novelty over the last few weeks. He says he finds it challenging and distracting. He says the rules are not entirely clear to him on what can and can't be challenged. So interesting to see him come out and discuss that, because it has been a bit of a talking point. It certainly provided excitement anyway, but I suppose a few people still struggling to maybe get to grips about how and when best to use it.
Yeah, me too. And like, for example, in the Connacht game last night, you know, when the Connacht put in a challenge at the end for an elbow to the neck, it almost felt a little bit, I don't know how I even describe this, but it almost felt a little bit like, you know, running to the teacher to tell tales or something. I don't know. It just had a weird feeling to it. Like, go back and look at that. I think he, you know, he hit him in the jaw or something. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal what happened. And you could see Kilcoyne went into the tackle and tried to fend a player off. But, yeah, I was a bit uncomfortable that you'd be going to the ref with these little petty things.
There's a few elements to it that I suppose are a bit serious. For instance, you know, the Ballacoon Henshaw moment last night, which is getting a lot of attention this morning. You know, for me, that shouldn't need to be challenged. Like, that was such a big moment that like, the referee needs to be taking that, you know, himself. I don't like the idea that teams need to challenge things that could, you know, 100% be looked at by the officials anyway. Yeah. And then another element to that is, I suppose, the one you referred to there. There is an element of certainty in the last couple of minutes where, it's, you know, teams are taking a bit of a punt. They're trying to just, will you check this on the off chance that happened and you might get a penalty out of it. There's certainly an element in the dying moment when there's nothing really to lose by losing the challenge of teams. Chancing their arm might be too strong a word, but certainly trying to, you know, there might be something. We'll see if we can get something out of it. I've seen a good few matches where that's happened in Super Rugby, especially like on the last play of the game, looking for a ruck infringement potentially to keep your moment alive. Like Luke McGrath tried to challenge something after the final whistle last night, and Mike Adamson said he shot him down, and I think that's what some of Leo's confusion was or questioning was. So it'll be interesting to see if it's kept on next season, because it certainly, if it was brought in, say, in Champions Cup in the heat of the moment, in the heat of the action, or the Six Nations in some bigger games, it could have some huge bearings on outcomes. So it will be interesting to see if that's something that's trialled more widely.
I hope it isn't. I hope it's gone, because I think there's enough officials looking at enough cameras and with access to playback that they're the ones that should be picking up foul play. They're the ones that should be picking up things that have gone wrong in a match, not the players on the pitch. Because I don't know for the life of me how a captain who's in the middle of a game concentrating on playing and everything else can spot out of the corner of his eye an infringement or something that might have happened in the middle of a ruck or the forwards or anything else, you know. So I just don't, I personally think it's a waste of time. There's enough.
Well, see, that's the funny thing. It's like, so, you know, you're the captain and then your teammate comes up to you and goes, oh, you know, so-and-so hit me there. Okay, ref.
Yeah.
So-and-so hit my mate there. You know, that's what's happening.
Yes.
It's not as if Tom Daly, say, the kind of captain, had access to his screen or had an earpiece in from Andy Fran. It's like Finley Beelam, I was the one who probably said, you know, Tom, will you check that there? I think I got a hit in the throat. And what's the captain going to do? I don't believe you. Finley, you know, leave me alone. Like, he's kind of probably back his guy. And, you know, it does add drama. Like, that's what I think that. Because there is a viewing element to it. Like, it was great kind of drama, but then I suppose you want to balance that against is it good for the game as well? It's an interesting discussion. I'll be interested to see how it plays out.
The other thing was the Lions schedule has been revised. It's, I don't know, I feel for these players that are going on this tour. Touring is all about enjoying the country, and in particular Lions tours, they get to see so many different things and intersperse with the community and everything else. And I understand COVID is a very difficult thing this year, but it feels to me now they're going to be cooped up for the same 6 weeks in the one spot, and to go up and play a match here and back to your hotel, train back to your hotel. It sounds like a horrific tour for the players themselves.
Yeah, there's one real big issue that jumped out to me just from looking at the schedule and how it's constructed. Obviously, I think there's two bases. They're starting in as a Cape Town and going up to Johannesburg, potentially, maybe. And they're going from one camp to another and then back to their original one. So there's a slight bit of movement. But it's more so, say, you know, after two matches, you pretty much know who's going to be in and around the test shakeup and who is. But it's 37 players. There could be 10, 15 of those guys, or 10 anyway, originally, who are pretty much gone. They have to remain in a bubble with nothing to do. How do you keep those guys on side? Because there's been loads of examples in the past of guys throwing in the towel. Like, I know John Mahler admitted he was one of the guys the last time who basically packed it in when he knew he wasn't going to be playing in the test, didn't take it seriously, and he basically admitted that Gatlin 100% held that against him. And that was with the freedom to be able to come and go and leave the hotel. Like, are you going to have these kind of figures who are used to being picked for every single game, basically kind of brooding in their small little bubble. It'll be a massive challenge for the coaching staff to keep those guys on side. And I was going to let him admit, I was thinking of the first time Lions, like if they go and win a test series, will they look back on it as fondly as they would ordinarily? I don't
think. Does it have the same meaning without crowd?
Exactly.
The game? Does it have all of those things? Yeah, it's a very interesting one. And it does, it just feels very much like this is a, just make it the money. Make whatever we can out of this. Let's fill it in, play the fixtures, get the TV rights on it and make as much money as we can out of it, because we're not going to make money like we normally would. So there's a bit of the commercial element to it, and I don't know, it'll be interesting.
But I still think the rugby show is really resonant. I don't know about you, but I've been amazed about the standard of rugby. Like, when you're watching it on TV, it doesn't actually make much of a difference to the TV viewing experience, but just having been at a few matches, it's dead as a doornail in the actual ground. Like, there's nothing happening against the players.
Yeah.
The quality's really good, so yeah. I'm actually still really excited to watch the rugby. It's the ancillary elements, you know, the passion of the Lions test crowd, which is another level to even a big international game. You'll massively miss out on that, but I'm still actually really excited for the rugby to start there. I think it's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the same kind of, you know, theatre around it, but, you know, I still think they're right to go ahead with it, maybe from a selfish point of view, because I want to watch it.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. All right, Will. We'll talk to you next week. Of course, it's Champions Cup next week, so it's going to be an exciting one to preview and look forward to. And you have a good week.
Thanks, Reggie.
Take care. That's Will Slattery there. Of course, Irish Independent journalist and left wing podcast contributor as well, giving us his thoughts on all of the rugby. We're going to take a quick break now. When I come back, I'm going to be talking to Deirdre Smith about all of the golf. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Time to turn our attention to golf now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Deirdre Smith, leading Irish amateur golfer. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. I got out for a game myself yesterday. I was down in Drew's Glen, so it was the first time in 15 months I'd been out, and I really enjoyed it, but I didn't play that well, but I enjoyed it anyway. It was good to be out.
It's
been going well, though, for Stephanie Meadows. Of course, she's qualified for the US.
Yeah, she's qualified for the US Women's Open, which is absolutely fantastic. She came one of the six spots there in a 36-hole qualifying, with two great rounds, 68, 66, 10 under, which was marvellous. So that's given her marvellous momentum, and she's playing next week in the LPGA event, the Pure Silk at Kings Mill. So marvellous for her. She finished third in the US Open way back in 2014. She's gathered a lot of experience since then. She loves the big stage. I know Stephanie really loves the US Open. She kind of talks so enthusiastically about it. So she's it takes the pressure off her next week as well in the LPGA, the ordinary LPGA event. So that's great for her, because it could just give her another little bit of momentum going into that tournament in June. You know, she's had a quiet enough year. She finished 19th in the first major of the year about 6 weeks ago, the ANA Inspiration. A wonderful tournament to be involved in, and I'm sure she's really excited to tee it up against the top players.
No doubt whatsoever. And you'd have to say, given her form of late, she should go well in it too. You'd hope that she could anyway.
Yeah, you know, she finished third in her, you know, her best result in an LPGA event, a major, in 2014. Mm. And that was hugely exciting, I remember, for all of us watching it. And since then, as I said, she's gathered a lot of experience, and if she can just, you know, 19th in that ANA Inspiration Major, look, a top 10 would be a marvellous result for her again. And I know she'll be, you know, she's getting to that age where she's gained an awful lot of experience, and all that experience and that mental fortitude that comes with, you know, that perseverance and resilience in golf, you know, just pays off. You just have to keep going and keep going and keep at it, and Stephanie has that stickability and that resilience. So I've no doubt she'll go well in it, yeah. And just, please God, we'll get Leona in. If she finishes well next week, she has a chance of getting in. She failed to qualify in the qualifier that she did in a fortnight ago, it's a bit more than that. And if she has a good run next week, she could get in. And I have no doubt that both of them will push each other. You know, they'll see that they've beaten each other at amateur level, and they deserve to be there. So look, it's what we've wanted in ladies' golf for a long time.
Good to have that level of competition driving each other on. Want to look back as well at the Walker Cup. Of course, the USA got the third straight Walker Cup win last week. Disappointing for the GB and Irish squad.
Yeah, look, they were so close. You know, 14-12, literally, that's a match and a half. You know, if you turn one match around to a win and another match around to a half. But look, in those golf tournaments, that's what it always comes down to. The margins are so small. And, you know, the two Irish lads did fantastic. They contributed, Mark Powell contributed 3 points and John Murphy contributed 2 out of 4. Both of those are in college in the States. So, you know, they're really gaining that experience of week in, week out, high-level competition. And they're playing against these guys in the States. And it just goes to show you that if you're playing at that level and you're playing against these guys, you have no fear. And they were right up there, you know, in their matches. I know Mark got a bad beating in the last game, but to win 3 out of 4 in his first Walker Cup in the pinnacle of amateur golf was fantastic for him. Mm. A super platform for both of them if they do want to turn pro. But what a brutal course that Seminole was. My goodness. It just looked like they hit these perfect shots and they just got bad bounces and suddenly they took double bogeys and looked rather silly. So,
yeah.
You know, all the pundits agreed that the course was the winner.
Of course, so, the winner.
You know.
You want to have nerves of steel playing a golf course like that, that's for sure. Then you get the bounce.
Well,
and you do get the bounce of the ball in those courses too, and your luck can be with you or against you, and you know, sometimes that's how it works as well. But it's a valiant effort, as has been reported.
Yeah.
Good to see you as well, my own club man in Greystones, Paul Dunn. He's not gone too bad, 8 under in the Masters.
Yeah, he's 2 under, leader's 10 under. You know, he just needs a little bit of momentum, Paul. You know, he just seems to be edging his way back in. He just seems to be making a small little bit of progress. And, you know, that's just a high-quality tournament. There's a lot of good players in there. So hopefully he'll get a bit of momentum now for the weekend and push himself up the leaderboard. He's 2 under, he's 8 off the pace. You know, but again, if he even gets a top 10, top 20 finish, that will be a great boost for him because he needs it. You know, he's been... But look, Justin Rose did the same years ago. He turned pro after a marvelous performance in the British Open as an amateur. He turned pro and he missed the cuts on the PGA Tour for something like 2 years.
Mm.
So, you know, that's the kind of game it is. It's fickle, and you have to just keep going and keep doing what you know is going to get you there. You know, Rory is case in point too.
Exactly.
I mean, 2 weeks ago. Mm. So. You know, one good round can change things around. It's amazing. It's just an amazing game in that sense.
That's for sure. And of course, Rory's confidence will be high now going into Kiawah Island next week, of course, as the USPGA tees off there. Obviously, he'll be one of the pre-tournament favourites. Who else kind of stands out in your mind for that?
Well, he's gone in as favourite. As somebody said, that's the kiss of death. But I hope that's not the case. Yeah, he's got a marvellous bounce now from working with Pete Cowan. Hopefully it's a bit more than that. He's kind of hinted that he's rededicated himself to the game. So, you know, he's obviously found something that's made him comfortable, made him feel comfortable on the course, which is great to see. Look, Dustin Johnson's always going to be in the mix. DeChambeau as well. He's the defending champion. John Rahm's playing unbelievable golf. Just hasn't got a win, you know, a major win yet. But he has to be feared. Speed's playing really well this week. Outside chance for me would be Matthew Wolff. You know, he's finished second in the US Open last year and top 10 in the USPGA as well last year. And Colin Morikawa, who's the defending champion, can't also rule out Xander Schauffele. He's been kind of the nearly man for so many tournaments. So look, there's so many good players. It's difficult to pick a winner. We need a big week from Shane Lowry too. So
absolutely.
For his confidence.
It was nice to see Harry Diamond getting a bit of praise as well on Rory's bag, of course, giving him the advice, crucial advice, you know, to play it safe just at the end last week as well. So just to show you the importance of having something good on your bag.
Yeah, look, Rory has said it afterwards. He's got some, you know, he said afterwards, look, Harry's got so much stick and so much criticism and, you know, we can, you know, in those situations when you're emotionally involved in a tournament like that, you know, it's very hard to listen to your caddy sometimes. You know, you have a shot in your mind, you want to do something with it, you're looking at the lie, you're the person who's playing the shot, and, you know, you you sometimes can overrule your caddy, but in fairness to Rory, he listened to him, and what a marvellous decision, and then what an unbelievable eight iron, because that was not an easy shot.
Yeah.
I mean, it was at least a yard below his feet, and he just made the perfect contact. So, you know, I suppose it's proof that you know that Rory's made the right decision to keep Harry Diamond on the bag, and everybody can question these things, but you know, Rory knows best.
He knows best, exactly. Long may it last, Deirdre. As always, great chatting to you, and we'll chat again very shortly.
Great, Reggie. Take care.
Take care. And that's Deirdre Smith there, one of Ireland's leading amateurs, of course, in her own right, golf, giving us all of the latest news on golf. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, though, we'll be talking to Declan Drake, who's here in studio with me to talk about the GAA. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. It's time to turn our attention to GAA now. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Declan Drake to go through everything. But before we do that, the Dubs, of course, were playing last week and went down to a 5-point defeat. And Declan caught up with the manager, Matty Kenny, after the match. Let's have a listen to that.
For three quarters of the game, it was nip and tuck from both sides. I thought it was a very good game from good work rate, good intensity from both sides. And I thought during the game, you know, when we had little patches of dominance, our execution let us down a bit. I think we had 13 wides in the course of the game, and a few of them came at vital times. But look, we kind of, you'd expect that. Like, you know, the guys are already 2 weeks back into collections training, so we have lots to work on as we go back into training Tuesday night. But what we need to do is sharpen up on our hurling, our execution, and our touch, and you know, over the next few weeks in the league, we'll improve in that area.
The goal was a blow, but the sending off of Liam Rush was another one.
Yeah, and it of course it was, and I suppose two of them came after the water break when it was a draw match to the water break. But look, it's the first round of the league. You know, we wanted to get out there this evening. We wanted to get hurling and wanted to see where we're at. And look, it was a good performance from both sides. And you know, Kilkenny deserved it in the finish.
Given the fact, as you said there in the interview, there was a sending off and everything else, 5 points against Kilkenny. There was errors there, but you'd expect that after the break that they've had, there's still plenty of optimism there around the Dubs.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's a lot of ring rustiness, obviously, in the performance, you know, and it showed as the game went on. But he summed it up perfectly there himself. The key moment really was the water break in the second half. We had great discussions during last year's league and championship, more so championship, when the water break was introduced. If you have momentum going into a water break, obviously it breaks it, and then inevitably the team who didn't have it before it have it afterwards, and that's exactly what happened in the game last week. They were level pegging it at that stage. The water break came afterwards, then Kilkenny got in for the goal, which was a poor goal to concede defensively for Dublin, and then Liam Rush unfortunately picked up his second yellow card and was gone, and Kilkenny held out for what, over the course of the 70 minutes, you'd have to say it was a merited win, but plenty to have worked on for Dublin. But at least they have that now, and you know, a few training sessions behind them before they go into this evening's trip to Amore Park to face Laois, who of course went down to Wexford last Sunday.
Yeah, couldn't have been a worse team in many ways. Some would say a great team to start off with Kilkenny, but you might have maybe liked to ease yourself in with another team first of all before you take on someone with the reputation, because there's as much psychological stuff when you're playing Kilkenny as there is about the skill levels and everything else that goes along with it. But you know, as I said, given that it was such a tough opponents that they were up against, 5 points, I think they can have good confidence going into the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, they can, but they need to pick up the 2 points today against Laois. So, as I say, Laois were beaten by Wexford last week, so they'll be badly wounded going into that game, and they'll be looking to get revenge for the championship defeat last year to Dublin, just as the Blues were from the year before in O'More Park. So they built up quite a nice little rivalry over the last couple of years, and this latest chapter this evening will be interesting, certainly. Looking out the window here in our studio in Dublin this morning, the weather is not fantastic. I don't know what it's like in the Midlands, but if it's conditions like that, it'll be a real leveller.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. Well, let's hope they can pick things up. Yeah, there's the footballers, of course, things are getting back. There's some very interesting games going on today, with Tyrone taking on Donegal and Kerry taking on Galway, and of course the Roscommon game as well. So it's good to see the football back as well.
Yeah, Kerry, the defending champions, have the honour of opening this year's league campaign when they face Galway this evening in Tralee from 3 o'clock. Both teams are smarting from their championship losses last year and have significant amounts to prove this year to the country. And the other one up in Nome, a real Ulster bruiser there between Tyrone and Donegal. And this is a significant one from a Tyrone perspective, Reg, of course, because it's the first time in 19 years that they won't have Mickey Hart on the sidelines. So the change of management up there, it'd be interesting to see what effect on the style of play, etc., that has up there. So everybody involved in the Tyrone squad today will be determined to put a serious marker down, as indeed, of course, on the other side will be the Donegal boys as well. So two great games to kickstart the league campaign, no doubt.
No question about it. And what about the footballers, the Dublin footballers, all feeling rosy after all the controversy they've put to bed from...
It's behind us now.
Recent weeks, it's all over.
It's all over now, yeah. We're back to the serious business tomorrow of a restructured National League, of course, this year. It's split north and south, and you have three games starting with Roscommon tomorrow. And significantly, because of that particular issue with the COVID-19 breach that you mentioned there, Dublin will play all their games away from home this year. Now, Semple Stadium in Thurles seems to be the neutral venue for a couple of teams. Certainly it is for us because we're down there next week to play Kerry. But I see Cork are playing Kildare there this evening as well. So that's that. But yeah, we don't have Desi, of course, on the sideline for the next few weeks. Mick Galvin, his great club man from Nafina, will take charge of the team. Was in the backroom team last year with him, vastly experienced coach. Not much will change. I would expect Dublin to come away with the 2 points against the newly promoted Roscommon team tomorrow.
I'd say there'll be an earpiece or two piping in information into each other's ear and relaying
that's
stories.
Allowed from his living room, you know. It's on TG Carr.
Technology now, Declan,
it's
you
on
know.
TG Carr, so no doubt they'll have the best of technology available to them.
That's for sure. Okay, the women's game, of course, is back as well, which is wonderful. They're next Sunday, am I right?
They are starting off next Sunday. By the way, the Camogie team are starting off this afternoon, so under new management, so we have to wish their management team the very best. You're talking about tough openers, Reg. Kilkenny, the All-Ireland champions, doesn't come much tougher than that, particularly away from home. So the best of luck to them. But the girls start next week against Waterford in the Lidl Ladies National Football League. And the good news is that two of their three games are going to be shown live on TG Carr. That's one bit of good news. The other bit of good news is that they're going to play their three National League games at county grounds. Parnell Park next Sunday against Waterford. The following week against Cork, in Parky Cove. And then Semple Stadium in Thurles. And that's great that they can play their senior league matches at inter-county grounds like that.
No, there's no question. The quality that they're going, and it's funny, you know, the ad is very apt, you know, level the playing field when you see that they're now actually playing on the top county grounds around the place. Yeah. And no more than they deserve, you know.
I mean, there's often been scrambles for venues for matches, you know, and it's no disrespect in Dublin to the clubs that have hosted the county team over the years, Ballyboden, St. Enda's and Naomh Maranogh in particular, splendid facilities in both clubs. But, you know, really it's apt that the flagship county team should be playing in the county ground, and that's the way it will be next Sunday against Waterford, which of course will be a repeat of their championship meeting last year down in Baltinglass. And two of their three games actually in this year's league are against teams that they played in the championship last year, Cork being the other one.
Any other encounters this weekend that caught your eye that you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to hurling this evening to Cork's visit to Semple Stadium to face Tipperary. It's a 5:30 start for that. Cork were very impressive last week in the defeat of Waterford and Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and Tipperary had a good joust with Limerick, so it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. That's probably the pick of it, although Wexford playing Clare tomorrow is an interesting one as well, with the no love lost between the two managers there, who of course were great teammates in the glory years of Clare hurling way back when. So Clare beaten by Antrim last week, surprisingly,
surprising.
A great result for the Saffron County. And you know, Wexford had the victory over Laois, although manager Davy Fitzgerald wasn't overly happy with the performance level. So that'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on this weekend as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah, the Antrim result was quite the surprise, no question about it. And of course, now all eyes on them and what they're going to do next.
Yeah,
you know,
they're in Kilkenny tomorrow.
Yeah. So
there you go.
That'll be the test.
No, it's a fantastic victory for them for confidence, and also in terms of the league, because they're not behind the eight ball after one game like the likes of Dublin are.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, that's great, Declan. Gives us all of our GAA news and updates and everything else. So we're looking forward to that, and I'm very much looking forward to see how all that unfolds. We're going to turn our attention to football now, and of course, it's time to join Alan Cawley, who joins us on the line. Morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Declan's in studio here with me still. Sort of up loud direction, there's the bragging rights are moving towards the direction of Drogheda. They got a fairly convincing win, it has to be said, last night against St. Pat's, and that doesn't do them any harm at all.
Yeah, good luck to them, Reggie, because they've been in the doldrums for a long time, as Declan well knows, Drogheda, but it's great to see them back doing very well. And they've a young up-and-coming manager, Tim Clancy, and Kevin Doherty as assistants, who Declan will also know very well. And it's great to see them doing really well since they've got promoted. So that was a huge result for them last night. They've had a brilliant start to the season, and I suppose to get the result last night against St. Pat's, who we all spoke about maybe being title challengers or contenders this year, it was a huge result for them, and a convincing win as well, Reggie. 3-1, a couple of great goals. Mark Doyle got a great goal. Dave Massey got a brilliant free kick. So they're doing really, really well at the moment, Drogheda.
Yeah, they are indeed. And of course, as I said, it wasn't quite as good for Dundalk. One-all draw away to Finn Harps. But I suppose, given the way things have been going of late, they might even be happy enough with that.
Yeah, which is a strange thing to say, Reggie, when you think how good they have been and the squad that they've assembled, and I suppose how expensive that squad is as well. They should be beating the likes of Finn Harps, to be honest with you. But to be fair to Ollie Horgan, he has done quite well at the start of the year as well. And it was a good result. It can be a difficult place to go, but particularly, as I said, they've had a good start to the season. So you don't want to be too disrespectful to them either. Going up to Ballybuffet can be difficult, so it's a good point for them. And it's just Dundalk. There's just more stories. And obviously, there was bad news for them during the week with the COVID issue as well, but they've addressed that. And it's just, I suppose, the issues that they have on the pitch are still carrying on. They need to get a manager in place as soon as possible, Reggie. I think that's the main worry to have at the moment, on top of a few other worries, but that's the main one. They need to get a manager in place. Yeah.
Any developments on that front during the week, Alan? I haven't heard too much about it now myself.
Yeah, and Declan, as you well know, our league can be kind of very close-knit in that sense, that you'd often hear different stories and rumours, but it's very, very quiet on that front. It really is, and I haven't heard at all. I think they were probably concentrating mainly on the issues surrounding the COVID stuff last week, and obviously the story with the players going out in Belfast, but certainly on the managerial front, it's very, very quiet. Now, you could argue if they're taking their time to get the right man in place, that could be a good thing as well. But I just think the longer it drags on, the more issues there are. I spoke about accountability last week, and that's certainly an issue I find for the players at the moment, because when you don't know who the manager is, it can be very, very difficult. And that's not making excuses for the players either. They still should be capable of beating the likes of Finn Harps. But while there's no manager in place, I think those issues will just carry on.
The further they fall off the European places as well, the more difficult it gets and the more the pressure increases on the club.
Definitely, Declan, because I think you said it last week, that would be an absolute disaster. Like, whatever about them not winning the league, but if they didn't qualify for Europe with the squad that's been assembled and the money that's been spent up there in that squad, I think if they're on record, as everybody knows, has been the most expensive squad assembled in the League of Ireland, and the outgoings that are there in Dundalk are huge. And for them not to qualify for Europe would be an absolute disaster, and I think question marks then would definitely arise around the owners. Would they stick around if they didn't qualify for Europe? I don't think they would, and I know there's already major discontent with the people of Dundalk up there with the ownership of the club, so there's major issues. It's sad to see. We've mentioned it a couple of times now on the show. It doesn't seem to be getting any better, and I don't think it will get any better. I think the longer these issues are going on, the likes of Shamrock Rovers are pulling away. You look at the news that broke with them during the week, the signing of Richie Towell on top of a team that are already looking like going 8 points clear of the win tonight. So it certainly looks ominous for all the other teams.
Yeah, and they have Derry tonight, and they do look like that's a game you'd expect them to win. And as you said, with the signing of Towell, it sort of feels, maybe I'm wrong, but it sort of feels like Rovers are getting away from everybody else, not just in this year's campaign, but in general. They just seem to be building a bit of a behemoth.
Yeah, definitely, Reggie. They are, to be fair to them, and they deserve huge credit for that. That squad has been assembled now over 3 or 4 years, and they keep adding it. And even the fact that they lost Jack Byrne and Aaron McInniff, who were huge losses, you look at the players and the calibre of players that they signed in the off-season as well. And I think the beauty of that is that when you have continuity in the squad like that, you're only topping up really with one or two players. There's not wholesale changes. Whereas you look around the league and all the other clubs, they're bringing, they might be losing seven or eight players and having to bring in another seven or eight. And you know the challenges that causes, Reggie, when you're trying to assemble a squad or a unity amongst the squad or a spirit. Whereas Shamrock Rovers have that built up now over three, 4 seasons. And you bring in the likes of Mandryau, Chris McCann, the competition for places that is amongst that squad as well. It's probably more difficult training games than some of the games they might play in the league as well. So they are certainly looking a force that's going to be around for a long, long time. And they deserve huge credit for that, Reggie. That's not their fault. Yeah. That's brilliant work from their point of view. And if it means they're setting the standards and pushing on themselves, good luck to them.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's... Yeah, and to be honest with you, Alan, that's a good thing too, because it does force other teams to bring up the standard. You know, certainly if you look at even in Leinster, they're the team that people, and in particular Munster, as much as it hurts them to say it, and Ulster and Connacht are trying to aspire too, because how far Leinster have pushed on in recent years. And it's a good thing because it forces everybody else to bring their game up, and it's not just a monopoly. Everybody else improves.
Yeah, I would agree totally, Reggie. And funny, when you mentioned Shamrock Rovers becoming a force there, the first ones I thought of in terms of a comparison for you, obviously, is Leinster. And that's exactly it. You're 100% right. And it does bring the others on, you would hope. And that's been the case, to be fair, with Dundalk over the last 5 or 6 years. They were setting the standards. They were dragging Cork along with them. Obviously, the wheels have come off a little bit down there in Turner's Cross, but they were going toe-to-toe with them for a long time. And Shamrock Rovers were then coming behind that again, and they're the ones now that are obviously setting the standards, and it's up to other clubs to match that. We were hoping that maybe St. Pat's might get to that level. I still think it's a bit early for them to get to that level, but they're building nicely. Sligo Rovers have a decent team this year again, and they're building. But you're right in what you say in terms of Shamrock Rovers being not only ahead of the rest at the moment, but they're probably a good bit ahead of the rest, Reggie. But on the other hand of that as well, they need challenges as well, and it's no good if they're winning the league by 10, 15 points and not getting challenged themselves. So they need someone. As I said, when Dundalk were winning the league, they had Cork going toe-to-toe with them.
Exactly.
Shamrock Rovers then had a little bit of a rivalry with Dundalk. That's fallen away now. But they do need someone to be challenging them as well, because when they go into the bigger games in the likes of the European competition come the summer,
they won't need it
because if they're going up against better opposition and they're not really being tested here, that's not doing any good for them either, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's two things about it, Al. Firstly, it's all about sustainability, and we've seen it happen at clubs that we both know over the years where it hasn't been the case. They've chased the dream unnecessarily at times. Shamrock Rovers won't do that because of their previous experience. And the point you mentioned about Europe is important as well. That's where the real measure of progression is for them this season.
Absolutely, and I think they deserve credit for that. Whatever about the quality on the pitch, Declan, off the pitch they're running things very well and are very prudent. And as you say, maybe that's lessons learned from the past, and good luck to them if it meant that they had to go through the troubles and obviously the financial woes that they had, but they've learned from it. Well, then they deserve huge credit, and they're running a prudent ship up there at the moment. They're doing very well. The academy set up is the best in the country as well, and it does look ominous for all the other teams. But not only that as well, the fact that they've such a good team and they're obviously winning the league, and it looks like they might go on to win the league, the money that they're bringing in, obviously the revenue stream from European football as well, that they're going to keep getting year after year, something like what Dundalk were doing, it means they're only going to get bigger and stronger and better, and probably start bringing in even a better player than what they have at the moment. So it certainly looks ominous for the rest of them. I was hoping that maybe St. Pat's would get a result last night just to keep the whole kind of league thing going and the title chase, but sadly, that wasn't the case. And as you say, Reggie, if they beat Derry tonight, that you go 8 points clear. And can you see anybody stopping them even at this early stage? I'm not so sure.
No, it'd be pretty difficult to see it happening. All right, well, we'll see what happens with that. FA Cup time across the water, of course. Chelsea, who we discussed last week, Alan. I mean, both of us agreed they're just the form team at the moment, playing beautiful football, proving it again. Albeit though, Leicester, they're there and they could get the job done too, you know. So it's actually going to be a really very interesting FA Cup final.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, Reggie. And we've spoken many times about the Cup losing its magic, but I definitely think there's a lot of interest in this game because I suppose the Brendan Rodgers story and what he's done at Leicester. And I think Brendan Rodgers, sometimes he can get a bit of unfair criticism. Sometimes people bring up the stuff at Liverpool. But I never found, even in his interviews and people, I suppose, suggesting that he was a bit fond of himself, he might have been a little bit, but I just looked at how good of a coach he was, and he looked at the job he did at Celtic as well, and obviously he's gone to Leicester and doing a brilliant job to get them into the top four, and I'd love to see him top it off at winning a cup. And even though I'm a fan of Tuchel and what he has done, I want them to win the Champions League, Reggie, so that's how I've separated it. But I would love to see Leicester and Rodgers in particular, because as you say, people go back to, I suppose, the time he got Liverpool very close, and then it's an easy stick to beat him with what Celtic saying, well, he should be winning trophies anyway. Yes, he should, but he won everything all before him. 9-10 trophies, it was unbelievable, and that's difficult to do no matter what league you're in. And now he's come to Leicester and look at the job he's doing, so I think it would be brilliant for him, and they're a brilliant team as well. They definitely put it up to Chelsea. I think it's going to be a really good cup final, and I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, no question about it. Declan, would you agree with that?
Yeah, really looking forward to it this afternoon, Reg. I hope, I'm not speaking out of turn when I say I hope Leicester can win it this afternoon, because they've had so much heartbreak over the years, and it'll be fantastic for them if they win it, and the likes of Jamie Vardy and co. But I think Brendan is an outstanding manager, and it'll be interesting to see what his next move is. He'll be slow to make it, that's for sure, and he will be a man in demand when the right opportunity comes along.
He's moved himself into that elite level, I think, Reggie. Declan's right, like, his next job could be easy, and it should be the top four, right? If I was Man United or any Arsenal or whoever you consider the top six clubs or whatever, he'd be the one I'd be going after. I think he's an unbelievable manager, and I'd love to see him. Whether the whole Liverpool thing, would he ever go to the likes of Man United, you don't know, but I think he'd be a brilliant manager at Man United.
I think he would. I mean, it's a job at the end of the day, and it would also be a little bit of a, well, there you go. You know?
Yeah, a little bit of that maybe, yeah, because I do think he's elevated himself to that level up with the likes of Klopp, Guardiola, those managers, those elite managers. I think he's in that category, absolutely. I think the way he conducts himself as well, the way he carries himself, the brand of football that they play. Look at the job he's done at Leicester. When you think of what he's competing with, the resources of the other clubs, the likes of Man City and United and Chelsea, and the money that they're spending, the recruitment is unreal at Leicester as well over the years. When you think of the players they brought in for cheap nowadays, I suppose. You look at Fofana at the back and Castagna, brilliant players, and he's done an unbelievable job.
I wonder would he fancy the Emirates if it ever came up. Not that they're a top four.
I think he's better than that, Declan. I think he's better than that. I'd be looking at more Man U and the likes of those, the top four maybe. Arsenal are just the top 10 team now.
How dare you?
Sorry, Reggie. All the Arsenal are the top 10 team now.
Right, okay. Well, on that note, it's been lovely talking to you, Alan Colley. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Pleasure, Reggie.
We might chat to you next week. We'll see.
All right, no problem. Thanks a million, lads. See you later.
Come on, Alan. That's Alan Colley, of course, of Colley's Call, giving us all of that. And that's all we've got time for in this week's show. Thank you for listening to us here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Our producer today was Jane McNamara. Thanks to her. And also, I'd like to thank all of our guests who are on the show today, and Declan for coming into studio. We'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.